Hello and welcome to the Muni Lowdown. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the managing editor for Debtwire Municipals. Today's podcast title is Prepper, Restructure, and Redo. I'm joined by Paul Gunther, a Debtwire legal analyst, and Simone Barabo, a reporter on the Debtwire Muni's team. We'll be discussing the recent First Circuit Court of Appeals ruling that Prepper bondholders have a secured $8.5 billion claim on the utility's net current and future revenues. And for the benefit of the uninitiated, PREPA is an acronym for the Puerto Rico Electric Power Authority. Paul, welcome back to the podcast. It's been a while.
Thank you, Paul.
And Simone, welcome back to you as well.
It's great to be here.
So, Paul, can you provide a little background on PREPA and the bonds in question?
Sure. PREPA was established by the Puerto Rico Electric Power Authority Act, and it's Puerto Rico's only electric utility. The Authority Act statutorily authorizes PREPA to finance its system with revenue bonds that are secured by its gross or net revenues. Pursuant to the act, PREPA entered into a trust agreement under which it raised money by issuing revenue bonds. The trust agreement establishes a payment waterfall. First, the revenues go into a general fund out of which PREPA pays its operating expenses. Later, the net revenues go to a revenue fund minus a reserve to cover future operating expenses. Then the revenues flow into a sinking fund to cover debt service. After that, they go to various subordinate funds to cover internal expenses like capital improvements. The Authority Act also has provisions that state that they create liens in sinking funds and subordinate funds. Those provisions use the word lien.
So, Paul, explain to us how the current dispute between PREPA and the bondholders arose.
Well, in 2017, PREPA defaulted on its obligations to pay bondholders under the trust agreement. And at that time, Congress enacted PROMESA, which enabled Puerto Rico to commence proceedings under Title III that are similar to Chapter 9 municipal bankruptcies. As part of the restructuring efforts, the Financial Oversight Management Board, the FOMB, which was established by PROMESA, commenced an action in the Title III court asking for a determination of the extent of the bondholders' rights and remedies against PREPA. This included a determination of the extent of their security interests, the extent to which the liens were perfected, and whether the liens were non-recourse, that is, whether the bondholders could only recover against the pledged funds.
And for the audience, PROMESA stands for the Puerto Rico Oversight, Management, and Economic Stability Act. How did the lower court decide on the dispute?
Judge Laura Taylor Swain, who's overseeing the Title III proceedings generally and that lawsuit specifically, held that the bondholders had liens only on the monies in the sinking and subordinate funds, but not on all net revenues or future revenues of PREPA. Also, that PREPA could avoid any unperfected security interests and that the bondholders' debt was recourse. That is, the bondholders could sue to recover on their claims outside of the monies in the sinking and the subordinate funds. The court estimated the value of the PREPA bondholders' unsecured claim on the net revenues at $2.4 billion.
And Paul, can you provide an overview of the appellate decision and how the court overruled Judge Swain's decision?
Yes. On appeal, a three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the First Circuit held that the bondholders did in fact have liens on PREPA's net revenues, including future revenues. It also found that the bondholders' liens were not avoidable. Finally, it found that the bondholders' claim was not recourse. The court also valued the bondholders' secured claim, found it had a secured claim, at $8.5 billion.
How did the appellate court arrive at different conclusions than the trial court?
The First Circuit started by focusing on the trust agreement's preamble, which states in part that PREPA does hereby, quote unquote, does hereby pledge revenues of the system and other monies. The initial question was whether the language in a preamble could create a lien and whether the words that were used were sufficient. The First Circuit found they were, that there were no magic words that were needed to create a lien, and that the agreement only needed to indicate an objective intent to create a security interest. So the preamble in the trust agreement did not have to use the words security interest or lien to create a lien. And the word pledge was sufficient. Next, the court turned to the term revenues of the system, which it found to be ambiguous. To define that term, it looked to the opinion of counsel clause in the trust agreement, which provided that the opinion of counsel that was to accompany the agreement must state that a lien was created on all net revenues and not just the funds that flowed from the net revenues into the sinking and subordinate funds. So based on that clause, that provision, the court concluded that the bondholders have a lien on all net revenues.
You said that the First Circuit held that the lien also extends to future net revenues. How did the appellate court arrive at that conclusion?
For guidance on that question, the court looked to the Puerto Rico Uniform Commercial Code and concluded that the lien was best understood as a security interest in an account under UCC Article 9. That is, it was a lien in the right to receive future revenues. It was therefore commercially reasonable for PREP and the bondholders to anticipate that such liens would extend to after acquired property, the court found.
What about the issue of avoidability? How did the First Circuit reach its decision, and why is it important?
As I noted before, the First Circuit held that the liens on the net revenues weren't in fact avoidable and that they were perfected. When a lien is perfected, it is priority over other unperfected claims. If a lien is avoided, that is, if it's undone, then the creditor holding the claim stands as an unsecured creditor and possesses a lower priority in the distribution waterfall. With respect to PREPA and the trust agreement, the First Circuit found that since the bondholders had filed a UCC financing statement, the revenues were already perfected with respect to the revenues that were already received. It also found that future revenues would be perfected immediately upon receipt. In deciding this, the court took care to note that although there are several theories about when a lien is perfected, Puerto Rico hasn't clearly adopted any of them. However, even under the least expansive theory, perfection would occur the moment that the funds were received and no other creditor could make a superior claim, the court found. Therefore, they found that the liens weren't avoidable.
I recall that you said that the First Circuit found that the claim was an $8.5 billion secured claim instead of a $2.4 billion claim. How did the court reach that amount?
The First Circuit first noted that it disagreed with Judge Swain that the bondholders held an equitable claim for breach of performance under the trust agreement. That finding was the basis for Judge Swain's estimation of the claim as an unsecured claim at $2.4 billion. She based it on what a receiver would collect over a 100-year period. Instead of finding that the bondholders held an equitable claim, the First Circuit found that the trust agreement gave the bondholders a legal right to payment. The court then noted the rule that when a legal right to payment arises from a debt instrument, such as a bond, then the proper amount of the claim in the bankruptcy case is the face amount of the instrument. Applying that rule, the court concluded that the principal amount of the bonds plus matured interest came out to $8.5 billion. It's important to note, however, that the court emphasized that this did not mean that the bondholders must be paid $8.5 billion. The court highlighted that the claim was only secured to the extent of PREPA's net revenues and the value of the funds in the sinking and subordinate funds.
How did the court arrive at its ruling on the recourse issue?
The appellate court looked to the bankruptcy code. Section 1111B provides that in a bankruptcy, a claim is recourse, that is, it's collectible against other than the pledge assets, even if the claim would be non-recourse outside of bankruptcy. And Section 927 of the bankruptcy code states that claims payable solely from special revenues are excepted from the operation of Section 1111B. Noting that the trust agreement specifically stated that the revenue bonds are not general obligations, and examples of general obligations would be Commonwealth revenues from items such as income or sales taxes, the court found that PREPA's revenues were special revenues and Bankruptcy Code Section 927 applied.
Is there anything else notable about the decision?
The decision also resolved whether bondholders' breach of trust and accounting claims should be dismissed. The First Circuit held that the breach of trust claim against PREPA should be dismissed because PREPA wasn't the trustee under the trust agreement. However, it upheld the accounting claim, which was an equitable claim for net revenues that the bondholders claim were wrongly diverted from debt service.
So the decision is largely in the bondholders' favor. What actions can the FOMB now take?
The FOMB has already filed a motion to petition the First Circuit to reconsider the perfection ruling. It argues that the First Circuit overlooks the contractual definition of net revenues under the trust agreement, which restricts such revenues to, quote unquote, monies received after current expenses are deducted. The FOMB argues as a result of this definition, the court's conclusion that the security interest was in a right to payment and could be perfected by filing UCC-1 financing statements was incorrect. According to the FOMB, it's Hornbook law under the Uniform Commercial Code that a security interest in accounts is only perfected by possession and control. The FOMB says that the only accounts over which the bondholders have control are the sinking fund and one subordinate fund, the self-insurance fund. I should have said before that the amount of monies in those funds is less than $20 million. So relative to the amount of the bondholders' claim, the $8.5 billion claim, it's relatively small. Thus, the sinking fund and the subordinate fund are the only accounts over which the bondholders have perfected security interests, says the FOMB. and the bondholder's security interests in other net revenues are unperfected and avoidable. In its petition for reconsideration, the FOMB may be appealing to the commercial instincts of the First Circuit or commercial concerns. The FOMB argues that it's not aware of any other decision that, as what it says, equates money with the right to receive money. It warns that the decision could not only cost PREPA hundreds of millions of dollars, but it could also destabilize secure transactions across the country. And that last statement is perhaps an appeal to what the FOMB may think was one of the drivers of the First Circuit's decision in favor of bondholders in the first instance. With respect to any further appeals, given the strong words in their petition for reconsideration, it wouldn't be surprising if the FOMB sought review of the avoidance issue by the Supreme Court if the First Circuit doesn't grant the rehearing petition. Another potential appellate issue is whether the pledge in the preamble creates a lien in any property other than the sinking and subordinate funds. In turn, bondholders may want to appeal their recourse ruling.
Thanks, Paul, for that great legal overview of the decision. Simone, want to bring you into the conversation. Now, obviously, you've been covering Puerto Rico generally for many, many years. And from your perspective, what are the implications from this decision?
The funny thing about this decision is that either way it went, it was really significant. I don't know if you remember this, Paul, but months ago, you and I were talking about what would be more significant if the First Circuit overturned Swain's decision or if it upheld it. I was arguing that overturning it would be more significant, and you were saying that upholding it would be more significant. And then it turned out we were just talking past each other because I was talking about for PREPA's bankruptcy, and you were talking about for the municipal bond market overall. So it all depends on your point of view.
So it's most significant for the PREPA's bankruptcy then?
Yes, absolutely. The First Circuit effectively set things back to the status quo for the muni market, at least in terms of whether these types of revenue bonds were secured or not. They are secured. If the First Circuit had upheld Judge Swain's decision, there would be a lot of muni debt out in the world that investors had bought thinking it was secured that would essentially be unsecured. Bondholders had argued that the language used on PREPA's bonds was fairly boilerplate, and so the ruling's impact would be far-reaching. Or at least could be far-reaching. Judge Swain's decision didn't fly under the radar of issuers and investors either. SIFMA, which is the Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association, argued in a friend of the court brief that upholding the decision would have a long-term detrimental impact on the market, driving up municipalities' borrowing costs. And 14 states also filed a friends of the court brief. Now, these states were all run by Republican governors, except for one which has a Republican attorney general. I'm not sure how much to make of the politics behind that. But the states argued that upholding Swain's decision would, and I'm quoting here, threaten the continued viability of the primary revenue stream for vast swaths of municipal public works projects, such as water systems, healthcare facilities, power plants, waste disposal facilities, or low and moderate income housing programs. So now the decision puts an end to those risks, at least if there aren't any appeals.
Let's move back to PREPA. What does the First Circuit decision mean for the bankruptcy?
It means that the plan of adjustment that the board filed will have to be amended. The real question is, by how much? There's still significant disagreement on this point. The board is arguing that it's going to need to change non-settling bondholders' share of net revenue, but those changes won't require a fresh vote on the plan. I think it's safe to say that bondholders are going to disagree. They've already indicated that they will likely be prosecuting accounting claims for alleged misuse of prior resources. In other words, bondholders think that PREPA has diverted over $3.3 billion from the sinking fund since the bankruptcy started. They will be arguing that they had a secured claim on that money. And no doubt, there are going to be a bevy of other arguments that the board can't just wipe out unsecured creditors or something similar, give them that money, and call it a day.
So what happens next in this restructuring?
There's a status conference on July 10th, so we'll know more about the parties' thinking after that. Bondholders and the board have been ordered back into mediation. It's always possible there will be a deal, but they've been so far apart, so far. Judge Swain clearly would prefer a consensual agreement. This isn't the first time she's ordered the parties back into mediation. Now, and this is just a little trip down memory lane. If you remember a million years ago, at the start of the bankruptcy, PREPA and the bondholders had a restructuring support agreement. PREPA was going to be the blueprint for how all other of Puerto Rico's bankruptcies got done. Members of the board changed and the deal fell apart, and the board started arguing that bondholders were unsecured, which the Unsecured Creditors Committee had argued all along. As PREPA started gaining support for the plan, it seemed to drive non-settling bondholders further away from a deal because not only were the offers perpetually getting worse as the board redid its forecast, but bondholders felt like they were being locked out of the deals that were being made. So the end result is that instead of being a blueprint, this is the last of the five major Puerto Rico bankruptcies to be done. And it no longer looks like it's on the cusp of being finished. And part of this is arguably Judge Swain's fault. Bondholders in the Unsecured Creditors Committee had pushed for Swain to allow the First Circuit to hear the lien and recourse challenge since her initial decision in March 2023. But the decision wasn't finalized, so they had to wait, and that's her prerogative to have them wait. Bondholders argued that the confirmation hearing should be put off until the First Circuit ruled, and Swain said no. So one possible effect the delay could have would be for bondholders to get skittish and reach a deal with the oversight board. And that would have been great from Judge Swain's point of view because she wanted a consensual resolution. Judge Swain once pointed out in court that bondholders had room to negotiate because they didn't buy the bonds at par. And you could almost, I listened to this hearing on the telephone, but you could almost hear the bondholders gasp in the room. One of the insurers pushed back saying that it was legally irrelevant. And in fact, insurers did owe the par amount of the bonds. Swain also made clear throughout the trial she was concerned about the outcome for the people of Puerto Rico. So if you're focusing on residents, you don't want to saddle them with excessive debt. In any case, although there were deals made recently, the number of non-settling bondholders is still significant. That could have been because those bondholders were confident they were going to win the lien and recourse appeal, or it could have been because the board didn't want to concede anything. So now there's still no agreement and a ton of work to be done, and the outcome of the bankruptcy in terms of how much bondholders get paid is still unclear.
Well, thanks Simone and Paul for this insightful discussion on this PREPA ruling. To our audience, I hope you found this podcast to be informative. Please support us by liking, sharing, commenting, and subscribing via Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until the next time, thanks for joining us on the Muni Lowdown.